Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400 plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
Today we have with us Kaiser Johnson. He's an actor who's appeared in Unplanned and Stranger Things. He's a voiceover artist who has lent his voice talents to Transformers, War for Cybertron, Call of Duty, Black Ops, Cold War, and Resident Evil Resistance. He's also an author of Grit and Glory, Cross-Training Your Body and Soul, and an upcoming pulp adventure series. To learn more and keep up to date with his work, you can visit his website at kaiser-johnson.com. Or find him on at Kaiser Johnson on social media. Today we'll be discussing his latest book, How to Be Miserable and Alone or Discover a Life That Truly Matters. Welcome back to the show, Kaiser.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Pete.
You're welcome. And I have to say this is perhaps one of the most original books I've read lately as far as the theme goes. So why did you write this particular book?
I went through kind of a long, I mean, I guess it's still a reversion process. You know, I came back to the church in college, and when I was, you know, asking all these kind of big life questions of, you know, gosh, what is life about? What is my career about? You know, how much does that matter? What about success and money and how are relationships supposed to work? And especially man-woman relationships and sex and who's God, all this kind of stuff. And it just happened to get connected with some really good Catholics who I found had some really inspiring answers that, you know, not only made sense individually, but made sense as a whole. And throughout my life, every time I find myself, you know, kind of down in life and wondering, you know, which way to turn, that kind of thing. If I have the sense to check what advice I'm listening to about how to live my life, I realize that I'm listening to the world's advice and not to the advice of God or you know, the church. So I think it's so easy as even just as people who live in the world, and you know, we're bombarded by messaging and from our culture and from on social media all the time you know, magazines and TV shows and streaming services and everything, and everything's vying for our attention, and it's very easy to just kind of casually not even notice that we start incorporating heresy into our lives and stuff that's just not for our best good. And I continually realize this. So it's not like I wrote this because I've got it all figured out, but just that we consistently have an opportunity to choose which voices to listen to, and we will be a lot happier and not be so miserable or alone if we're listening to the voices of ones who have our best interest at heart.
Right. And speaking of some of those outside influences, I somewhat chuckled right out of the gate when in the prologue, you point out that we may not think we have any problems, but blogs, social media, and magazines do a great job of convincing us that we do. Why do you think all of these outlets seem so bent on making us feel bad about ourselves?
Well, I mean, that's how you make sales. I think one of the largest, one industry that, for instance, saw an explosion in COVID was this idea of like learning, which in some ways is so great, that you go, gosh, you can learn a new language during COVID or learn how to cook or do this kind of thing. But so much of it was also just like, hey, here's how to, here's how to fix your body because it's terrible and it's going to get worse during COVID. And here's how to, stay social and still connect people. And here's how to run your own online business. And here's how to do this. And so much of selling is pointing out a problem and then showing how you can solve the problem. And, we live in a monetized culture where all of our media messaging is monetized in some way. I mean, people go, television show, it's just too bad that there's ads in television shows. And, when you're watching on network television and stuff like that. And it's like, no, that's why television is able to exist, is you're actually watching a show that cuts in between commercials, not the other way around. And so that, I think, is so much of what we run into is all this messaging that we receive is designed to sell us either products or on a philosophy. And so it's easy, if there isn't a problem, you need to create the perception of a problem to get a sale.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. In a book, I really love this line, and you wrote, quote, "We often unconsciously assume that the church is stuck somehow in the past and couldn't have the answers to the questions of our day," end quote. A lot of people, I think, fall into that trap, but it's very far from the truth, isn't it?
It is. One of my favorite authors who I quote a ton in this book, G.K. Chesterton, he says something, I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit, I guess, but because I can't remember it exactly, but he says something along the lines of, basically, we don't need a church that moves with the world. We need a church that moves the world. And orthodoxy is the only thing that prevents a man from being a slave of his times. That if we just, that there is, if it's true that there is an unchanging creator, and that there is something eternal in this world, and or I mean that transcends the world and transcends our mortal existence, that doesn't change. And so no matter what the kind of circumstances of the times are, if we get stuck in the idea of thinking along with the times, or even thinking with the counterculture of the times, then we're still being influenced too much by the times and not by the unchanging reality that undergirds everything.
Right. Right. So in chapter one, you look at our relationship with God and our burning quest to discover the meaning of life and our individual purposes as creatures of God. Now, if COVID had any silver lining, I guess it was that it forced us to slow down. We talked about the negative stuff, about being bombarded by everything a couple questions ago, but it did force us to slow down. But I look around, and for some, it was an opportunity squandered. So if lockdowns can't slow people down enough to cultivate a relationship with their creator, what can we do to convince them that this is something that's very important?
Well, yeah, I remember hearing someone say, and I don't know if this is from AA or what it's from, but the idea that human beings change out of inspiration or desperation. And I think that that's really, I mean, I've noticed that in my own life, that only the things that really inspire me, or when I'm in a really desperate situation, I go, I can't live like this anymore. Those are the times when I'm open and able to change. And so, yeah, for some people, COVID wasn't desperate enough for them. Or maybe nothing is desperate enough for them. Maybe you know, they can only be inspired to grow and change. And this is something I talk about. I talk about it in the book. One of my favorite pieces of literature is the St. Joseph's Number 2 Baltimore Catechism, mm-hmm. which is like a cartoon version of 4th, 5th, 6th grade reading level version of the question and answer catechism from the 1950s or 60s.
Yep.
And it's an amazing thing because it can be challenging or seem challenging to be able to describe complicated theological concepts to kids. But it's like if any of us are to, really understand the world that we live in, we need to be met where we're at. And so much of us could really, it makes faith much more applicable if we can understand it from a childlike perspective, rather than having it be something esoteric and theological. But the book points out, it has this great diagram of like, this is our weapons against sin and weapons for virtue, basically. And, it shows us, this tiny little pistol. And it's like, that's encouragement. That's talking to people about the faith and talking to them about God. And then it shows like a rifle. And it's like, this is living a life of good example. So people are inspired by you to see what a life could be. And then the next one up is prayer. And it's, a cannon or something. And then, there's a battleship or something is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That our strongest thing that we can do is suffer and offer our suffering for people that we care about. And then the next highest thing we can do is pray. And Christ, when is it the Gadarene demoniac or a different one that in the Bible, Jesus casts out this demon and and the apostles go, why couldn't we cast it out? And he says, this is the kind that only comes out through prayer and fasting.
Right.
That there is this great power in uniting our suffering to Christ's and saying, hey, make this a saving suffering that can save someone from what they're going through. And I think that's the thing is to, if people are able to be inspired out of suffering and see, again, a life that truly matters, it can show in so many ways, the places where we are miserable, but show it to us in the best way where we go, oh, I don't have to continue my life this way. There is a better option. And so to be inspired into that, and I think that happens through us offering our prayers and our suffering and living that life of example, and then those opportunities to give encouragement arise.
Absolutely. We kind of touched upon this earlier, but we live in a society that's driven by a desire to consume. For some, nothing's ever good enough. We need better than we had before, and in the end, we find out we're left empty anyway. And you talk about this in the one chapter in the book. How do we break this cycle in our own lives if we find that we're kind of trapped in that vicious circle?
Yeah, the vicious circle of consumption, you mean?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it can be a challenging question, because it's so easy to just kind of slip back into it. But when it comes to generally the best way to combat a vice is to find what is the corresponding virtue and to do that. And so, when the vice is consumption, it strikes me that, perhaps the corresponding virtue to that is generosity. Finding ways to be a giver of things and to divest yourself of things and always seek to give more than you get or that you seek to obtain. When I was a kid, I remember my parents had a rule. I don't know how it would have worked long-term if we'd really followed it, but the rule was like, if you bring a new toy into the house, you have to get rid of two old toys. You have to get rid of two. And like that, I don't know how that could have, somehow we'd have gotten to negative really fast if
yeah.
we were somehow actually doing that. But I think that there's a really good idea there. So during COVID, you know, at one point, my wife and I, we, you know, Marie Kondo'd our our house. We were just vicious with going through and going, okay, this thing has served its purpose. It has sparked joy, and now I'm ready to let it go. And just, you know, really cleaning house as far as that goes. But even getting rid of a bunch of stuff doesn't necessarily really break that cycle of then, well, you can just fill that up with more. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you can go to Costco and do that and then some in one fell swoop. So I think, it really has to come to a place of recognizing the need for stewardship and generosity, that you are someone who gives more than you take in, and that you are not the owner of anything in this life. Not even, you know, as St. Paul points out, you are not your own, for your body has been purchased at a price, by the death of Christ. Mm-hmm. And so everything we have is, you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. And you know, there's a whole long bit about Job in here and a whole long bit about Solomon in the book. And, mm-hmm. I think both of them are really good examples. You know, one, there's a cautionary tale in Solomon and an example, in Job of how to be a person who is not concerned with, your possessions and recognizes that your possessions are, you don't actually possess them in the first place.
Yeah.
They're temporarily in your care.
Yep. And for anybody that hasn't dove into the story of Job, I highly recommend you spend some time in that book, because if you think you have problems, you're going to quickly find out what problems are all about.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Have you had your entire family killed and your wife abandon you and everything you've ever had lost, and find yourself on a heap of garbage and poop and covered in sores, scratching yourself with a broken piece of pot and giving yourself infections?
Uh-huh.
No? Okay. Then you're doing okay.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
So, the one chapter I thought was really good, you're talking about, each of us facing our shortcomings and regrets. And it seems, yeah. as you point out in that chapter, that we're almost conditioned to accept our faults, cover them up, move on, even to
right.
the point of thinking we'll never be good enough. And within that chapter, you discuss the confessional. And I wholeheartedly agree with your assessment that confession is the answer to solving that. So, you
yeah.
know, how do we draw people back to that sacrament?
Yeah, this is a really good question, because it's one of the, it's a sacrament that is so hard to show up for, I think, in a lot of ways, or to really show up with your whole soul there. You know, I know that there have been times for me when I've shown up to confession, even, you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm negotiating with myself about, like, how much I'm going to let it affect me, you know, mm-hmm. to speak my sins aloud and just like, I'm just going to blitz through. I'm just going to say, here's my laundry list. There we go. And now he's going to say the words of absolution. That'll get out of there. And it's not going to affect me at all. As opposed to like, then there are confessions where I'm saying my sins aloud and I'm just wrecked by it, you know, and mm-hmm. just like, how am I? And I just had this experience this last week here of like, of kind of just dealing with my own sin and just like, I went through this thing where I did something that really affected, someone I care about and I didn't realize it at the time. And just dealing with that and going, boy, if I ever was at risk of thinking I've got things figured out, and that I'm you know, I'm a real great virtuous person and I can do no wrong, this one knocked me right back on my back, you know, mm-hmm. and going, wow, I really was careless and thoughtless here, and how much can this be one? Yes, okay, I can take this and I can just go, well, I guess I'm just an awful person and that kind of thing. And, or I can take inspiration out of that desperation and go, okay, this is, you know, the church is a hospital for sinners, not a museum of saints. And so, what do I do from here? How do I come back out of this and seek that grace of God to ask forgiveness of the person, who I hurt and to, ask forgiveness of God, for doing something to hurt, you know, one of his children. And, and by that, I mean, you know, as we're the children of God and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And just to go, and one, you know, one of my brothers and sisters, who I ought to be, you know, laying down my life for, and, loving as myself and thinking as much about them as I think of myself. How do you reckon with yourself so that you can reckon with God? And, it's a challenging thing to do, but boy, is it good for us.
Yeah.
Like if we can muster the humility to do it, and let it affect us, it has the power to actually change us, as opposed to going into confession, having our sins forgiven, but largely leaving unchanged, except for the, you know, except for that, the fact that our sins are forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we go into confession and then go out of confession and go and sin no more?
Right.
So that's not an answer to the question, but that's what I've been meditating on and struggling with the last few days.
You know, and also in that chapter, I think a key to that whole thing, setting up that confessional, and you pointed out as a good practice, is the daily and weekly examine.
Right.
You know, sometimes we just get so caught up in the hustle and bustle of life that, similar to what's the story you just told, we don't realize we do things unless we take that time to stop and assess, you know, the day and the week that has just been behind us.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. And boy, I should do this more. But yeah, you know, St. Ignatius thinks you should be, you know, 2-3 times a day examining your conscience and examining what you've done that day. And because it gives you an opportunity to correct course, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't be the boat in the Suez Canal. Fix it before, you know, as you're just starting to drift, go get back on track. Don't wait until you just kind of drift and drift and drift and run aground. So I think that's, yeah, I think that's a great idea and something to continue to implement more, is to check every single day, multiple times a day, and go, how's this day going?
Mm-hmm.
How's it going, God? Yep. How am I doing? And how am I responding to your grace, and where am I not? So, yeah.
You know, in the book, you also cover this topic, which was kind of near and dear to my heart. You talk about, you know, as the saying goes, money is the root of all evil. And in chapter 6, you write about careers and our pursuit of success. Mm-hmm. I got off that hamster wheel about 4 years ago when I left a job at a local manufacturer where I was in quality control. But, you know, when we're in that corporate life, things can get a little dicey. So how do we avoid becoming this person that is just so focused on climbing the corporate ladder that nothing else matters?
Yeah. You know, and actually, I would also posit that, that even if you're not in climbing a traditional corporate ladder, you know, anything like that, that you can still run into it. I mean, I think it might be in that chapter, or maybe it's in a different one, where I relate the story of going to confession with a priest who, you know, knew my work and knew the stuff that I do for, instead of, you know, being in Unplanned and Catholic mm-hmm. Central and these other faith-based things that I do. And he really just laid it on the line for me. And as I was telling him my sins, and he's like, you know, you do a lot of work for good, but that's not the same thing as doing good work or being good.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, ouch, okay. yeah, wow. Keeping it real, Father, okay. And just that sense of even if you're working for a charity, you know, or you are, you know, Mother Teresa, there can still be, you can still have the wrong focus. I'm not saying Mother Teresa had the wrong focus. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that even someone in Mother Teresa's position could have the wrong focus. And I mean, I guess you can see that various stories of people who've lost their way, you know, in religious life or mm-hmm. in charitable things where, anyway, you can see that mm-hmm. there's no shortage of examples of that. And so I think, you know, again, well, like the quote that opens the chapter from, you know, St. Jose Maria Escrivá says is, look, he's the founder of Opus Dei. And so he, if there's anybody who's going to be like, yeah, work is really important and offering it to God is really important, it's going to be him. And he still goes, you know, he goes, look, work has the opportunity to connect you with your community. It has the opportunity to elevate your soul. But with all of that, it still must be put in its place. It is a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is far less important what you do for work and what your position is at work than who you are at work and in work and how you use that means to an end. That it should be something that work should provide a discipline for you. And the suffering in work that that you are earning your bread by the sweat of your brow, that should be, it can be offered to Christ and, it can be a cross that you bear with him. But we're not really meant to find fulfillment in work. It can be satisfying, you know, especially if you do something that you love, mm-hmm. yeah, it can be satisfying, but it won't be fulfilling. And I think we look for that too much, and some people look for it just in position and in title and the right salary and that kind of thing. And some people go, you know, my job just isn't fulfilling me. And it's like, that's not what it's there for. Your life is your relationship with God is meant to be fulfilling. The relationship with the people around you, though it may be challenging, though it may be difficult, though it may sometimes be painful to be a person of love to them and to your coworkers and to that, but that's what's meant to be fulfilling. Not your job
mm-hmm.
or your career or how much money you're making.
Right.
And if you try to put that weight on it, it will not bear that weight. And, mm-hmm. you know, midlife crisis coming in 3, 2, 1, because once you find that it doesn't work, if you just try to find another way of making it work, it's still not going to work.
Right.
So you need to find your fulfillment in the places that God has created for us to find our fulfillment.
Yep. And as we wind down here today, dovetailing off of that, you have another chapter where you focus on schedules and what I call busyness. How do we avoid being simply busy all the time and rather lead a life with purpose?
So I think that comes a lot down to choosing what our priorities really are. Christ says, where your treasure lies, there your heart will be also. And I think the converse is true too, where your heart lies, there your treasure will be. And that you, if we can get clear on what matters and make that the first priority in our lives. Like, I think I talked in there about how, like, my family and I, you know, my wife and kids and I, you know, we're frequently running late for Mass. And it's like, okay, so what does that tell me? That tells me that Mass is not my first priority. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that there's a problem there. That if Mass were my first priority, I would not be trying to fit in other things right before Mass. Like, oh, well, I can get a little bit more sleep and I can do, you know, I can just take care of this one work email and I can do this. And then we'll go out the door and we'll rush out the door and we'll be there. You know, we'll roll it right into the church parking lot at 8:30 and, you know, we'll get into church at 8:40 and, you know, it's mostly just unimportant the first 10 minutes anyway, so it doesn't matter. As opposed to, like, how can I very consciously set aside time for God and have that be the first priority that I approach every day for a little while? So, you know, I do a rosary each day, and for a while there, I was really good about making the first thing I did in the morning, and not doing other things while I was doing it. Then my son was born 3 months ago here, and so now I just get woken up. I don't wake up on my own. So I have not been doing such a good job with that. But there, it was something where I'm relearning and teaching myself again to go, okay, what are my priorities and how am I going to put those first? And so how can I put God first, family second, and everything else after that? And planning that too. I was listening to a podcast recently from, actually it's a real estate investment podcast, but they were talking about, you know, one of them was saying really loving time blocking and putting in his calendar. He's like, this is family time from this time to this time. My phone is off and this is what I'm doing. And he goes, because my family time is a priority. I don't want to just try to fit it in and then let other stuff interrupt me from it. I'm just going to go, I'm blocking this off. This is for family, and nothing else will interrupt that. And I think getting clear on your priorities, and, you know, the way that we're created does indicate that God first, family second, everything else after that, tends to be a good option if people are curious about what good options are. Conceptually, that's a good idea. I would like to do that more. Setting those priorities in place and figuring out how to go, this time is for you, God. This time is for you, family. And I won't let other things interrupt that, because that's how I show where my treasure lies, and that's where I want my heart to lie also.
Amen. Kaiser, where can people find your book, How to Be Miserable and Alone, or Discover a Life That Truly Matters?
So you can get it at osvcatholicbookstore.com. You can get it at amazon.com. We're in the midst of a little bit of a reprint right here. I had left something in there that wasn't supposed to stay in there, and so they've been gracious enough to fix it and help me get through that. And so it is a little bit of a delay, but you can pre-order the book right now. Again, it's back to pre-order status on Amazon, and same thing on OSV. But you can go there and you can get it now, and it'll get shipped to you as soon as it's ready, which should be like a week. So it's not going to be a long wait.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for today. Kaiser, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
I mean, not really, but please get the book. And when you do get it, if you like it and you love it, please leave a 5-star review on Amazon. If you have anything less than a 5-star review too, write to me about it. Don't leave a review.
There you go.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, and you can reach me at kaiser-johnson.com, and there you can reach me via email and get on my email list if you want, or you can just write to me, and I'm happy to take that.
All right, and with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. Until next time.
This episode is brought to you by Hallow, the number one Catholic app. Hallow has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallow meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallow.com/breadbox.